Conversations with Authors podcast. I'm your host, Alison Thompson, aka The Proof Fairy. And this podcast is a fabulous opportunity for me to have a chat with a published author about what inspires them to write, how they go about the writing and publishing process, and what effect it's had on their life. I also find out what tips they have for other aspiring authors. My guest on the show today is Cheryl Andrews, who is a personal performance and relationship coach, a motivational speaker, and the author of Manage Your Critic, From Overwhelm to Clarity in 7 Steps. Our conversation took a few unexpected turns, so here is a trigger warning for you. We do touch briefly on subjects including drug abuse and self-harm, so please don't listen if you might find that upsetting. On with the show. Cheryl, it's really lovely to meet you today. Thank you for being a guest on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, you're very welcome. So tell me about your book.
The book I've wrote first is Manage Your Critic, From Overwhelm to Clarity in 7 Steps. And it's effectively the 7-step process that I learned when I was training as a coach on how to listen to somebody else without judgment, without criticism, to help them to change the way they talk to themselves and about themselves, so that they could actually get what they wanted in life.
Okay, so what inspired you to write it? So you were obviously using this in your coaching business, but then you decided to put it out there for everyone to...
Well, I think I've always wanted to write, but didn't know that. So I think when I started writing the book, I realised there was this inner writer in me that had always wanted to write. And in fact, when I think back, when I used to get really frustrated with my mum, I'd write her letters because I found it much easier to write something than to actually to talk it and then have to have the feedback of them being upset or cross or whatever. So I think I've always had this writing, this yearning. I coached Karen Williams back in 2009 when she was writing her first book to help her manage her critic, to get her to that point where she was like, she was worried about it. So I saw her write her book, saw the success. Yeah. I think it's always been bubbling. That's back in 2009.
Okay. Karen Williams has published, I don't know how many books now, lots of books, hasn't she?
I think she's on 9.
Yeah, she's going to be a guest on the podcast later on this year.
But
So you coached her when she was writing her first book.
Yeah, because that was more about clarity and confidence. And it was much more about, she felt like she had been on an emotional roller coaster, and who was she to write a book? So when it comes to that sort of stuff, that's what I was helping her with. Yeah, so of course, when you work with your clients, then you hear about them writing their book. And then I saw the success she got from it, and I saw how that helped her to elevate her business. And so there's a little part of me that she'd sown the seed and the desire in 2009. But I didn't get around to really committing to it till 2014. So like 5 years later.
Yeah.
But the real catalyst for writing it was because 2008, I was a mums and daughter relationship coach. 2012, I found myself in a really sort of paralyzed, unable to ask for help. I was on the floor and saying things like to my husband, like, I just want to die, just want to go to bed, I don't want to have to wake up tomorrow, I cannot face another day of failing. And the relationship with my own daughter had fallen apart, and I didn't know how to ask for help without it damaging my business reputation. I was so worried about my business reputation that I allowed my personal relationship to get to crisis point before I reached out for help.
Gosh,
and so when my husband said, what would you tell your clients to do? The first one was get one of me. And then I had to think about what was it I was doing with my clients. And so that's when I started to map out how was I doing it and what was I doing it, so I could get a coach to take me through my own programs. Oh. And so it forced me, because I was going, yeah, but I'd want one of me. Nobody knows what I know. and I think I know loads of people do that, but I work with a process called clean language, which is actually quite often when I work with people, I'm not giving them any more information. I'm just giving them back to them so they can hear themselves think. Mm. And I realized that's what I needed, but I needed to know what it was I was doing and how was I doing it? What was I paying attention to? What was I listening to? What was I asking questions of? And why was I doing that?
Yeah.
In order to be able to delegate the task and ask someone to help me. So then it wasn't long after that I actually got my team to take me through my own programs. And just to put people, my daughter was on the streets at the time. She was self-harming, taking drugs. 10 years later, we just had coffee this morning for breakfast, and we went out for breakfast together. We have an amazing relationship. She's an amazing human being. But it took us nearly 3 years to rebuild that relationship. And I couldn't have done it if I hadn't known how to ask for help. And I realized that, you know, the one thing my clients had done that I hadn't done is got somebody else to come on the journey with me that was outside of the family, outside of the business, somebody that was just going to support me to get clarity of what I wanted, but more importantly, catch me getting it right when I'm right, and to keep me cheering on to sort of recognize when things were changing. So that was the driver. And ultimately there, I suppose the other thing is that my mum died quite young. She was 63. And one of my fears was that I would die and my children wouldn't know this stuff, because the listening stuff is all quite invisible. So I listen to them, but my daughter probably doesn't know how much I changed the way I listened in order to change our relationship, or she won't know how I went and got help in order to be able to get that sorted. And I just thought, if I'm not around when she's going through with her kids, I just want to leave a manual behind. So my children are always my driver. They're the ones that help me to focus on and actually say, actually, I want to leave behind some clarity, some breadcrumbs of how I did what I did, so that it's not invisible to them.
Yeah. Wow. So it's a legacy for your children.
Definitely.
But presumably it's been really helpful for other people as well.
Yeah. And interestingly, my children have read it. My son's not that bothered about it. My daughter finds herself going, oh, I used one of your questions the other day. And so it sort of sunk through. But what I've also realized is that now what drives me is the thought that right now there's tens of thousands of people who are crying tears in private, who firstly don't even know that coaching exists. Secondly, don't know that clean coaching exists and how it works, and possibly don't even know that I exist. And so a lot of my driver of doing these interviews, writing the books, is because I know how hard it is and how much courage it takes to say, do you know what, things aren't great in my personal life. Things aren't going the way I'd like them to, or even in the business, you know, if you're not making the money you want to do, or you're not feeling as efficient as you want to, it takes huge amounts of courage to reach out and actually ask for help. Because in doing so, you have to admit that things aren't okay. Yeah. And so a lot of what I do now and a lot of my vision and mission is to make sure I leave enough information around so they always answer that first question in the book, is it just me? Because like, no, it's not just you. And you have to find your own unique way out of it. But there's plenty of people out there that can support you to do that.
Gosh, I wish I'd known you 3 years ago, or I won't go into too much details because this is about you, not about me, but I had a similar situation with my son who has special needs and who had a drug problem and who wasn't homeless. He was living in my home, but the relationship was very, very difficult. I mean, part of my ending up in Portugal actually is that I kind of ran away from my problems almost. You know, I needed to put that distance between us. And like you said with your daughter, we have the most amazing relationship now. You know, 3 years on, we're very close, and he's doing really well. But I wish I'd known about your way of working.
If I just leave you with one nugget, you refer to your story as you ran away, and another reframe or way of looking at it is you gave your relationship space. And I think, you know, that sometimes, you know, my daughter, you know, she'll say I kicked her out. I say I gave her some rules, and if she didn't like them, she could leave. And so there's this me, you, whatever. But the reality is we physically had reached a point where we needed some physical space as well as mental and emotional space in order to ground ourselves. And the biggest thing that I swear, you know, my husband said to me, what would you tell your clients to do, is that the first thing was get some help. Don't try and do it on your own. Mm-hmm. And the second thing, instead of focusing on the other person, the son or the daughter, my whole thing is about resourcing that parent, that individual. Because if you don't feel good about yourself, if you feel worn down, you feel like you're a failure, you feel you haven't done it, you can't be the best version of yourself. And therefore, you're not even a very good role model of confidence for your children or your clients or anybody else, you know, wherever you're sort of the forum for the challenges. So we have to work on ourselves. We have to give ourselves that space in order to find out what it is we really want. Takes time.
That's so true. I love the direction that these conversations take sometimes. They always inspire.
Well, I've been listening to the podcast and I must admit, I was sort of like, oh yeah. It's like, sometimes I have to stop and take a note on my phone because I'm usually listening to them when I'm walking, and I'm like, oh, I must write that one down.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm a great listener of podcasts while I'm out with the dogs. I always listen to something. So let's drag this back to the book, because that's what we're here to talk about.
Absolutely.
So I know now what inspired you to start writing it. How did you go about the writing process? I mean, you've said that you put yourself through your own program. So how did you translate that into actually physically writing the book?
Well, I think that, well, first of all, I went on a writing retreat. That was the catalyst for me. And we talked just a bit before we came on air, is that, you know, at 54, and back then, so we're talking about 2015, so we're talking, I can't work out, 48, 49. I'd never, ever lived on my own. I went on this writing retreat, and just by fluke, or the universe was aligned, whatever you want to call it, I was put in an apartment on my own, whereas I could have been sharing with somebody else. And the retreat was set up on the basis of, we went for a group walk in the morning, then you had all day to write. If you wanted facilitation, there was a facilitator on hand. And then we met for dinner in the evening, and you chatted with the other, but you basically could be there all day. And so I went away on that retreat with the intention of writing the book that I'm currently writing, which is Do, Delegate, or Ditch. And the question came up, you know, who am I? And it was like, so that's when I sort of started realizing there was this little detective inside of me, and it was all about wanting to help people see their strengths and their solutions and stuff like that. But I got myself in a right tiz was about it. Karen sat down with me. I think I remember getting up one morning about 4:30, and I could see her light was on in her apartment. So I just sent her a message that we were there in pajamas having this coaching session at sort of 5:30 in the morning. And I said to her, I've been stuck since Monday, but I haven't been able to ask you for help. I was sort of waiting for her to come and check on me. And she was just assuming I was okay until I asked. And it was a real sort of like, so she said, what's the first thing you do with your client? I was like, oh, I do all this stuff with settling their brain. And when you do this stuff of settling their brain to make sure they feel okay and they can get that curious state, you know, what's the first thing that happens? I was like, oh. So what I realized in that moment is there's a whole new book I had to write before I could write Do, Delegate, or Ditch, because you can't really get into this delegating and asking for help if you don't have clarity and confidence in yourself. And if you're in that state of flight and freeze and feeling really bad about yourself, and you've got this sort of overactive critic that's always criticizing you or criticizing other people, you can't engage in really helpful and honest conversations with yourself or anybody else, because you're in that critical state. And so that book, the Manager Critic book, sort of came out of that 5-day retreat. That was September 2015. And then once I had the plan, I basically spent most of that 5 days working out what book I was going to write, what the plan was, and then wrote that over the next 18 months, and we published it on the 1st of December 2016. And what worked particularly well with that is that I was going to Australia in October to meet up with an old school friend, and it was a once in a lifetime. I probably wouldn't go back to Australia, and knew that, and I was really determined to take a copy of my book with me to give it to her. So I realized, so I did end up taking a copy out with her. We call it the Flawsome Edition. There were still some editing mistakes. I had 10 copies. I read them when I was out there. I was like, oh, one of them. I didn't take all 10 of them in the plane. But I was reading it like, oh, that's some mistakes here. So I did have to go and have them edited again after I'd actually had it printed. But I was so determined to take one with me. So there's two things I learned from that process was, one, you have to have clarity of what book you're writing. And I started to realize there was probably about 16 books inside me. So I know what the next four are, and I know what the last one is. I don't know what the other ones in between are. Yeah, there's some books you have to wait till your parents aren't around before you can write them.
I was gonna say I have a book that I really want to write, but it might upset my children. And it's that difficult thing of, I need to have a conversation with them about writing that. And I really feel I need to get this story out there, but like you said there, you have to be so careful of other people's feelings and how they're
absolutely going. You might find that this chapter in this book is, because that's a lot of time I now go back, and for the next last 5 years I've been helping at the writing retreat with Karen, and a lot of the work I do is about changing the way you tell the story. So if you are writing it, sometimes we need the story to be heard, because we need to, for cathartic reasons, it's a therapeutic reason. But that isn't always very easy to hear for somebody else. So a lot of the work I do with authors, when I just occasionally work with some of Karen's clients, is about taking that drama out, so that and helping have those conversations with people, so that when you put it in writing, it isn't a surprise to them. and or getting to that point where you're absolutely okay with them not being okay with it.
Yeah,
because that's
yeah.
the other option.
Yeah, no, that's very true.
And I think that's a really good example of life, isn't it? Sometimes we can pussyfoot around trying to make decisions to keep everybody happy, which is another chapter mm-hmm. in the book, is I just want everyone to be happy, but the net result is you end up unhappy because yeah. you're not speaking what you really think. But if we leave it and leave it and leave it, what we tend to do then is speak from a place of anger and frustration, which then doesn't land particularly well. Whereas had we got more clarity about what we were saying and our purpose for saying it, then it would come from a place of love and good intention, yeah. which even though it won't be nice to hear, at least it lands a little bit more gently, and their reaction is just them reacting to being uncomfortable with what they've heard or being upset with it. But those emotions are temporary and they pass.
Yeah, yeah, that's really good advice. Actually, I think a lot of people do want to write sort of memoir type books and talk about their own life experiences, with a view to their experiences helping other people. You know?
Yeah.
But yeah, just find that there are things that are very sensitive. And I worked on a book recently about he wrote it under a pen name, and it was about his abuse he suffered at a Catholic school. As a child yeah. and then sort of further abuse throughout his life, and he found it really cathartic, but yeah, he was very, very careful to kind of change details, and so it wasn't really his authentic story because he'd had to change yeah. a lot of it to protect. And it is very much walking that line, isn't it, that fine line.
Yeah.
You don't want to hurt people or upset people, but at the same time you've got to do what's right for you as well.
Absolutely. And I think that's when I talk as the listening detective about different kinds of listening. So sometimes we're writing because, or we're talking, whichever medium we're using, we're expressing ourselves. Mm. And when it's therapeutic, we often just need one person to have witnessed it. We need it to be heard.
Yeah.
Which I found with my book, I have done a little bit at the beginning about my story and a little bit about my journey with my daughter. But there was a big chunk of in there that was a bit of a woe is me, and it was really terrible and nobody understood me and I was really sad, and those are true emotions. Mm. But once six people had read it, I edited it. I didn't need everybody else to see or hear that. So it was a much more succinct version of it. So I think that we have to, when we're author, I think from an author's perspective, you can write which is your venting and downloading for your own cathartic reason. And then you have to just make sure that what the reader is receiving, what's the purpose for the reader? What's the purpose for your child you're yeah. talking to about it? If you're telling your partner you're cheesed off with them, what's the purpose? What do you want to have happen next? And I think that's why I spend a lot of time with my clients going, okay, yeah, you're frustrated and they're your emotions that they need to be honored and witnessed and expressed. But actually to hear that is, you know, if you keep doing that story over and over again, it's not easy to hear. So for what purpose?
Yeah.
And if you write a book without clarity of why you're writing it, what you want to be different for somebody else, then it just ends up being what I would call a venting session.
I did an interview with an author called Susan Walklate, who wrote about home educating her son. And she says in the interview that... the first draft was a rant. The first draft was her getting all her anger out of her system about the injustices that she and her son had suffered. And then when she read it back, she realised just how angry and kind of quite vitriolic it was. And then she rewrote it in a way that was going to be helpful for other people. But she kind of had to get the emotion out first. Yeah.
And it's not to discount that, because I think if you don't mention in your book, so I mentioned how heartbroken I was and how sad I was, but it doesn't consume the conversation because if I didn't mention that, the person who's reading it, who's feeling angry and hurt and upset, would think you didn't get it. So it's about acknowledging those emotions, but not allowing them to consume it. And I think that's what we need to do as authors. And so for me, that was part of my journey, was to learn to, you know, when I read it back and thought about it as somebody else having to listen to it or read it, it certainly made me update my story and think, actually, and that's the why in the clarity process, is your why and your story, is that the way you talk to yourself and about yourself and your situation ultimately will determine how stressed your system is, because it's listening to you all the time, your own system, and therefore that then impacts the quality of how you communicate what you want.
Yeah.
So I definitely, as part of my process, there was definitely a venting and a catharticness. And there's been a little bit of that with book number two. But what I've discovered is I have to put out my processes. I have to give it to one person, they peer review, that's fine. If they say it's great, it goes out to six. And there is always, once it's gone out to the six, then it always comes back and I go, oh, that doesn't need to be in there now. There's just this, and that's where I do a lot of one-to-one coaching, group coaching, is showing people that sometimes you just need one other human being to hear you, mm-hmm. and other times you need more than one person. Yeah. And that's why the group coaching can be so powerful mm-hmm. and so impactful. But it's also why writing a book and giving it out to the world can be absolutely terrifying, but equally empowering, because once you know it's free for everybody to read, either you have updated the story sufficiently so it's malleable, or it's something easy for people to process, or you've reached a status where you go, do you know what, I don't care what you think, mm-hmm. this is my world, this is my map, this is my experience, and whilst you may not like hearing it, I'm okay with you not liking it because it's my truth.
Yeah.
And there is a fine line between, I think, speaking your truth and speaking with actually wanting something to change.
Right.
If you just want to vent, then other people will start venting with you and you can have an argument, or they'll just get destroyed. And as long as everybody involved is okay with that. But if you're not really sure of your purpose for doing it, then you end up not getting the response that you want.
Yeah, it's sharing your truth in a way that is going to benefit other people and being very clear on how that's going to work, isn't it? I think is the secret.
Or just sharing your truth knowing the only person that's benefiting is you.
Well, yeah, I guess there's that as well, yeah.
You can own that.
Actually, you know, however many billion people there are in the world, it's not just going to be you when it comes down to it, is it? Because however unique your situation might feel to you, actually, you know, this is what I discovered. I thought I was the only one going through what I was going through. And then I talked to people and it was like, oh, I've had that. Oh, I know. Oh, yeah. And you suddenly realise that you're not the only one. And actually other people are going to benefit from reading your story, even if you only write it for you. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's where the question, is it just me, is one of the most common asked questions I have in my, and that's one of the chapters of the book is it just me? And I think there is something that goes, oh, thank goodness, it's not just me. There's a normalizing of it. There's a like, oh gosh, it's not me that's the complete failure. However, if everybody just vented about what didn't work and how angry they were or frustrated or whatever, you just have this pool of people that go, oh, we're all stuck in the same mess. And it's like that moment of relief doesn't last very long.
No.
Unless someone can say, here's the ladder, or here's the rope.
Yeah.
Or not to hang yourself, but here's the way to get out of this situation.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And it only has to be very tiny little things, doesn't it? It can just one tiny, tiny little bit of hope.
Even just saying one thing that worked for you. Yeah. If you just say one thing that worked for me, or one thing that gave me hope, or one thing, or what would have worked better for me would have been this, or what would have liked to have had happen was this. I'm talking about being sort of solution focused, but if you're changing the way your focus when you tell the story, your own system becomes more aware of what was working at the time and what did go well, and actually the courage, because yes, it was horrible and pants at the time, but the fact that someone's writing about it or talking about it now, they're kind of forgetting that they got over that.
Yeah.
And that's not who they are today. And if you only tell the woe is me story, your system and the people around you still think you're stuck, but actually, invariably, you've moved on without consciously being aware of it.
That's very true.
And that's where the magic and the lessons are lost.
Yeah.
Whether it's authorship or speaking in our relationships, is because we get stuck in wanting to get the emotion or the pain of the situation validated. But if we go, it's really pants, and I was really courageous and I did this, this and this, they'll get that bit validated and they'll feel better.
Yeah, because there's light at the end of the tunnel, because you've come through
it. And sometimes it takes time. Sometimes you need to vent, and then you need 6 months before the rest. And so I'm quite a slow author writer. I've been working on this one now for 5 years. Mm. And I'm now going away on another writing retreat on the 1st of October, because I've realised that that's the space that's been missing.
Right.
I haven't given myself that space away from family responsibilities and business.
Yeah.
And I haven't given myself the time just to listen to myself in order to get that clarity. Mm. I'm off to follow my own process.
I did something very similar with my first book. I started writing it at home and I had all the plans and everything, but actually finding the time to sit down without distractions or without the excuses, I think they quite often were, was really difficult. And in the end, I booked an Airbnb for a few days and I thought, right, okay, I've spent money on booking this place. This is my writing time. I don't want to waste it. I was a single parent at the time and money was tight and I couldn't afford to waste that time. So I went off to Brighton for 3 days and came back with like two thirds of the book written. So yeah, it's I think finding making that space for yourself can be something that's really important.
I think it's really important to do that. Like you said, you know, that money's there. So it's a bit like me wanting to get the book for my friend in Australia. There was a deadline. I wanted to do that by there.
I want to pick
But
up
I
on that
think,
actually, yeah.
yeah, the deadline's really important. And I think, but that said, with this the second book I was writing, Dude Like Got a Ditch, I had a deadline of June 2020. So I'd gone off and done a talk at this event, and these 25 women were absolutely gorgeous. 17 of them bought my first book, and I was talking about my second book, and it's going to be coming out later that year. And they said, "Oh, can you come back with your book?" I said, "Yes." I booked to go to speak at their event in June, and I didn't really think carefully about where I was and how quickly I'd get the book done. I had the book at the editor in the March, ready for the June. It came back from the editor. And I looked at it and read it. Whereas when this one came back, I was like, oh my God, I wrote that. That's really lovely. I really like that. When my second book came back, I just looked at it and went, that's pants.
Oh
I was,
gosh.
I just, there was something missing. And I, you know, and just can't. What I'd done is what a lot of the clients I help with, I'd gone through the process because it become sort of very objective. I'd taken all the emotion and the motivation away. None of the motivators and the drivers were in the story. It was just like, do this, do this, do this, do this, do this. And I was like, oh my God, it's boring as hell. I can't. But I could, it took me a while. So I had to be okay with going back to luckily or unluckily, COVID happened and we had a pandemic. And I didn't get to travel to this speaking gig and we did it virtually. But by the time June came, I'd worked out what was missing and I did the talk about the seven principles of motivated action, which was the thing that was missing from the book. I didn't have the principles that underpinned the whole process. So I think, yeah, deadlines work. But I think the other thing to remember when you, when in terms of like this whole thing with relationships and listening to yourself, is that I would say 80% of the time, I can give a client a set of questions and show them how to analyze their answers. And teach them through, like I did in the first book, I can teach them how to do it. But 20% of the time, you can sit there with as much stillness and enough space and enough time in the world to write your book. And I have written 120,000 words for this current book easily, but I'm just rambling. And if I'd had just one person asking me a question, just to really narrow my focus and really train my attention, then I would have been a bit more succinct with what I was doing. So I think you have to just listen to what works for you as a writer. Equally, so book number two is about, you know, what do you need to work at your best, learn at your best. You need to know what works for you. And you and I just talked about it. I know I'm noticing as I go into my 50s, I need a lot more time on my own. And occasionally, I just need 2 or 3 minutes of dialogue. But of course, if you're at home and you go and ask your partner or the kids just one question,
That's
it's
your day gone.
invariably more. So if you go on a retreat with a facilitator, which I'm doing with Karen, and I say to her, I just want to talk to you for 5 minutes, she'll set the timer and go, that's your 5 minutes. And it's like, otherwise, it's not that they're talking necessarily. I can be the one that's talking. I can get carried away with the story instead of going, actually, let's go and do something with that information now. But I think we're all different, aren't we? We have to find our own unique way of doing
Oh,
things.
definitely. I mean, going back to what you said about deadlines, that struck a note with me. So my first book was about raising a child with special needs and it kind of stalled. I got off to a really good start and then it stalled. And then a friend encouraged me to carry on writing it. So I actually set a Facebook launch party and I kind of worked backwards. When can I feasibly do this? And I worked backwards. And as it was, I actually brought the launch party forward a week. Because the book was there and ready, and I was so excited. But that really did focus me on getting that book written. And it's like I've told people, I've invited people, they're coming, I can't let them down. I'm writing a book at the minute about writing books, and I put out this bold, not a launch party, but I said on Facebook, it's going to be out on the 1st of October. Well, actually, I finished it, and then I said, "Oh, yeah, what?" Then I asked the question, "What would you like to be in this book?" Duh. And somebody said something, and I thought, "Ah, oh, yeah, I've not done that." And I reread the section, and I thought, "That's rubbish. That's really awful."
Yeah.
And I've now been struggling to research and rewrite this section, and the book is not going to be out on the 1st of October. But I'm kind of like, do you know what? Actually, I'd rather it's out 4 or 5 weeks later, but it's a good book. It's the book I want to write. Then I stick solidly to that deadline and I get it out, and it's actually not what I want to be doing. So
yeah,
see, I think having a deadline is really important. It's a really good motivator, but you do kind of maybe need to be flexible with it.
I think it's about remembering, isn't it? Because my past life, I've always been in roles where I'm motivated. So I used to be a Slim and Well consultant. I've been a sales manager. I've been an accounts manager. And I set my coaching practice up in 2008. And what I know for me and other people is that you can set yourself a motivator of a deadline. And the drivers tend to be, I don't want to let people down. I don't want people to think I'm not professional. Or, you know, they're quite negative drivers. They're away from. And when you get there and you achieve it, it's great. But if you've got like my one, for example, I was really motivated to give this book to my friend. But the reality is what actually happened is she never commented on it.
Oh, no.
So she was my motivator. I worked my backside off to get there. And actually, if anything, over the next couple of months, she talked about how I overthink things. And so it was obviously it given her a different perspective. So I know that what I've developed since writing the first book, because I was writing it for my children, I was writing it for my friend, I was writing it maybe for approval. This time around, the deadline was set for approval for this. I wanted these, I really love this group of people. I still love them and I want to go back and give them the book, and I will do that one day. But I never checked with myself whether that was realistic. And the difference is this time around, I'm writing a book that isn't about whether other people approve from it. It's got to be good enough for me. And I think that's part of my development.
Yeah.
And if you've got a lack of self-confidence and a lack of clarity about what you want to write about, you can get in a position where you keep going around in circles where you convince yourself it's not good enough, but actually it's because you don't feel good enough.
Right. Yeah.
And so and I can tell the difference between what is actually my old patterns of worrying about what people think versus actually I know I can do better. And so that's what I will be spending that week, not to necessarily write, but I'm going to spend that week to be really, really clear what kind of book do I want this to be. Because I've had the same kind of conversation, like, oh my god, I could interview people about that, and I could interview people about that. Oh, I haven't researched that, I could do this. And I thought, you know what, I could just write this book as a summary, and then the next book could be an interview of 20 people on how they make good decisions. The next one could be about 20 people who how they plan more effectively. So I could, whatever I've got as little summaries in this book, those can be deeper dive books in the future,
a springboard for something else.
And I think but people often don't take the time out to separate out all their thoughts. In fact, I remember listening to the episode where you talked about your book, and I was chuckling to myself as I was listening, thinking, I need to talk to Alison about that. Because it's like, because I could hear you sort of saying about your deadlines and that. So I think my thing would be is just checking where the deadline's coming from and who's the deadline for.
Yeah,
it's why coaching works, because if you've got a coach, you feel like you have to do it because you've paid that money and you're going to see them again, and if somebody else is doing it. But ultimately what really works is when you know the deadline you've set is realistic and it's what you want to do. Doing it for other people has a very, as parents who might do it for 20 years, but generally speaking we'll have that there's only so long you can do it for approval. Eventually, you have to be able to do it for yourself. Equally, those people that are very, very, I think there's two spectrums on the feedback model. You've got people that worry about what everybody thinks, and you've got people who don't worry about what anybody thinks. And I think you can go through life caring about everybody and then never get around to doing something. So you have to learn how to care what you think.
Yeah.
And equally, if you don't care what anybody else thinks, eventually you might get lots of stuff, but you may not be very happy because. Unless we care what other people think, we can't have that collaboration, we can't have that connection, we can't have those relationships. And success on your own isn't very much fun. if you haven't got, you know, whether it's your fellow business meet people or your family to celebrate stuff with.
I think it doesn't work
long term.
No, that's right. I think the thing with this book, my first book I wrote for me, and if it helped other people, so much the better. And this book is actually for other people. It's about writing books. So it's about the process I use with clients to help them write books and about how to publish. But I didn't ask the vital question of other people first. What would you like to see in a book like this? So I wrote it and I focused very much on one particular publishing platform. And then somebody said, well, it'd be nice to hear about something other than Amazon. And I was like, oh, yeah, it probably would really, wouldn't it? So it's kind of that I just put myself in it, my own experience. And it's now that widening it out. It's all that thing about making sure you know what the book is about, who it's for, and why you're writing it in the first place.
What's your purpose?
I hadn't followed my own instructions.
Do you know, well, that's, I know, but that's the irony, is it? T in the clarity process of my first book is trust your own process, take your own advice.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the hardest things about being an author, but also about having the courage to say what it is you want or need in life. Because often what we're telling other people to do, we're not doing it ourselves. And so I think that's what's great about authorship. And I think that's probably where the biggest challenge for me was. I was talking about people having the balance between working, learning and living both independently and with other people.
Yeah.
And as I alluded to before we came on air, as I'm at that point in my life where I'm going, I've got 5 children, 4 grandchildren. I love my business. I love everything I do. My life's quite full. And I'm at a point in my life where I could really want more time on my own.
Mm.
And I realized as I was writing the book that I was talking about the balance between working and living both independently and collaboratively with other people, or just working with people. And I realized I wasn't in balance. One of my rules are, is I've got to walk my talk.
Yeah.
So I can't publish it until I feel like at least I'm halfway there. Yeah. I know it's worked because I've done this for 10 years for clients. I've seen my clients do it. I have to be able to do it. And so it will get published next year. It will definitely I don't know which date it will be, but I will know that once I've got clarity that next week.
And
I think you just have to trust your own process. But I will say as well, I've worked with another book mentor who says about writing books in 5 weeks, and Karen tends to do hers in 6 months, and mine seems to take 18 months by from the minute I go, yes, I'm going to absolutely do it. But I ponder it for about 5 years by the looks of it. That seems the pattern so far. But I would say to any author, if I gave a tip out, would be don't wait too long to write a book that's about your own personal journey. And the reason being is you change and you evolve. And then everything you wrote about yourself at the beginning, if you wait 2 or 3 years, you've changed in that time, and then it starts to feel unauthentic because it's not who you are today. And then you get yourself in a bind, or you just go, actually, I'm writing about who I was. That's a book that's about that section of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to put it out there, and it doesn't matter that that's not who I am today.
Yeah.
I think if you wait too long, you change, you learn more information, you get more stuff, and then you'll never get the bloody thing published because there's always going to be new information and new possibilities.
Yeah. No, whereas, that's right. Yeah, I was going to say
something. Like your Amazon thing, at the end of the day, you use Amazon. I know that's how you work with your clients. That's what works for you. So that's what you'll talk about.
Yeah.
There's nothing to say that you couldn't produce an ebook that says research and other, or just say there are other things, there are other brands available at the bottom, top of the adverts, isn't it? So.
Yeah.
I've
thrown myself into the getting bogged down on. I have used other platforms. I just prefer Amazon, but it's personal preference, isn't it? But I'm getting bogged down in the detail, the finer detail of the other platforms now. But it's nearly there. It's getting there. So talking of publishing, very quickly, how did you publish?
I've self-published using Ingram Spark.
Okay.
So that means that, but I also at the time I used a book designer, and I had an editor and somebody who was, what's the word called when they formatting it? That's the word. So I had some individual people doing it the first time round, and that worked mostly, and it was cheaper to do it that way. But there were some problems when with the self-publisher. Who did I do it with? I can't remember now. But they're a weird company that basically the green when it came on the book wasn't like it had looked on the screen, and so it wasn't the right green, and we couldn't work out. And they were a company that didn't want to they only did email. Well, I have to do auditory if I'm struggling to understand something, and they refused to pick the phone up. They refused to pick the phone up. So I had to move it from them to Ingram Spark. So I worked with Sam Pierce from Swap Books, who is actually doing my second book for me. So because of the way I know I'm not very good at spatially holding information, I delegate all of that, and I make sure that somebody's working in partnership with me so that I can do it. But it's under my own, I think it's under Step by Step Listening. I think because Ingram Spark, I've bought 10 ISBNs under Step by Step Listening. So I've got my own publishing thing effectively. But I'm very confident that Do Delegate or Ditch is the book I was on the planet to write. So I'm really confident I'm going to self-publish, but I'm pretty sure it's going to get picked up somewhere along the line.
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? That a lot of people think self-publishing means that's it. That's as far as it's ever going to go. But I know plenty of people who've actually self-published and then have either had that book republished. I mean, it's happened with me. My book's been republished by a traditional publisher, for better or worse. That's another story. But or who have been... their self-published book has been discovered, and then they've been commissioned to write something else for a proper publisher. So it doesn't have to be the only way that you go. Definitely.
I think that I avoided the publishing, the traditional publishing route, just because this was my book. It's aligned with my programs, and it's part of my journey, and I'm evolving to do it. And therefore I didn't want it controlled by anybody else. I didn't want somebody else saying you need to word it like this or change like that, because actually this was about me finding my voice. The writing the books helps me find out who I am and what is it I know. So I doubt very much the actual Do Delegate or Ditch. When I now said that out loud, I don't think I'd ever want it to be under a published traditional publishing, because it's part of my branding as part of my company. And I'd want to retain the rights to that. And I'd want to be able to do my own second editions when I want to do second editions and update it accordingly.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I think the stigma around self-publishing is fading fast, if it's even there at all now. And it does just put you in control, doesn't it? And there's something very empowering about being in control of every step of it, choosing who you want to design the cover, choosing how your book looks, choosing where you want to publish it is a very empowering process. And you lose a lot of that control, don't you, when you go
you do. And the difference is that the advantage is that they've got a team of people that are doing the editing and the design, and they're giving you feedback, because their primary thing is they want to make it a commercial. So I think there's a difference between people like me who write books to enhance their coaching practice. So I don't need to sell loads of books. The book doesn't itself won't make me money. The books build me credibility to spend, you know, for people to spend a couple of £100 or whatever on a coaching course. So I think it's always remembering why what's the purpose for writing? What's the purpose of being published in those ways? But I do think people get pulled into the publishing deal thinking that they're going to do loads of marketing for you, and they won't.
No.
So there's a lot of misconceptions about it. But I do think when you're self-publishing, I'd really encourage people to make sure you have other people look at it, because it doesn't matter how much you know your stuff, or even how good you are at grammar, or how great you are at English. We get word blind once we've read it so many times. We think words are there that aren't.
Definitely.
We just make it up in our head as we're reading it, don't we?
That is exactly right. Yeah. So I would always recommend that at the very least you get somebody else to proofread your book. I'll be getting someone to proofread my book, and I'm a proofreader. You know, I can't. Yeah. The proofreader can't proofread her own stuff because she's written it. So. Very least get someone else to proofread it, and like you said, also get somebody who knows what they're doing to do the cover and to format it, because you want to produce a professional book, and self-publishing doesn't mean it has to be shoddy, does it? You can produce a fully professional book. It's just it's not tied to a major publisher. So
absolutely. And I think that's the important thing. Don't go down self-publishing because you're afraid of feedback, because you'll still need feedback. If you don't have feedback, you run the risk of something going out there that you think represents you, but if you are not getting feedback from someone who knows you, you may inadvertently be putting out something that doesn't really reflect you in the best light or in the best way, because you've repeated yourself or you've missed out a word or whatever. As much as we can all listen and read without judgment, the truth is the brain, when it expects to see it, it interrupts the brain, and so it makes it harder for your reader.
It does. It takes you out of the reading, doesn't it? If there's a typo or something, it
does just interrupts, it interrupts you. You have to work harder, don't you, to try and process what you've read.
No, that's right.
So you want to make it as easy as possible.
Yeah, definitely. I've just noticed the time. We're running out of time here. We could talk till day, couldn't we?
I think we could have done. Absolutely.
So I was going to say, what's next for you? Well, presumably do delegate or ditch is what's next for you immediately. And then the rest of these 10 books you have planned.
Well, do delegate or ditch is the next book. And then I really want to spend a good 18 months really focusing on that and the academy that runs alongside that. And then the third book will be about the power of a group, because I think that we're always a bit in a bind. I think as learners, we can do a certain amount on our own completely independently. Sometimes we just need one person to talk to, and sometimes we need the power of a group. And ironically, when we're stuck, is sometimes we need the group, but we don't have the confidence to go in the group. And so we end up in this place where we just don't ask for any help at all, because the fear of, you know, it's great when you have joyful moments in a group, but obviously if it feels embarrassing or shame, it's magnified. And it takes huge amounts of courage sometimes to step into these group environments, whether it's socially or personally. So there will be a book that's about the power of groups, and also some stories about I've got some stories of some of the sort of the highs and lows of some groups that have really worked for me, and some really ones that have been very shaming. The impact they can have on you, both in the workplace rather than anything else. And therefore, there's some social responsibility for all of us to be aware of other people when we're in sharing space with people, is we shouldn't make assumptions. And that just a few questions to check if they've got everything they need to be at their best can make a huge difference. So that will be book number three, but I'm going to do that through interviewing people and finding out what their stories are.
Brilliant. It sounds like there's so much more to come from you. Charlotte, it's been absolutely wonderful talking to you today. Where can people find you online?
It's www.stepbystepslistening.com.
Thank you.
And I'm on LinkedIn, I'm on Facebook as well, if you want to come and find me there.
I'll put all the links in the show notes. Thank you so much for being on my show today. It's been fabulous.
Thank you for having me.
That's great. Joy. You're welcome.
Thanks, Alice.
Thank you to Cheryl Andrews for being my guest on the show today. I really do think we could have talked all day. Cheryl's first book, Manage Your Critic, From Overwhelm to Clarity in 7 Steps, is available now from her website, stepbystepslistening.com, and all good booksellers, and I'll put the links in the show notes. If you're feeling inspired to pick up a pen and write your first book, then I would love to help you. Visit my website, www.theproofferry.com, where you can download a workbook and book a free call with me. You'll also find all the episodes of this podcast there. If you're already a published author, you'll find out details of how you could be a guest on the show. If you've enjoyed this podcast, then please subscribe, share it, rate it, and tell your friends about it. This has been a Proof Fairy production, and I'll be back next week with another inspiring interview with another amazing author. Bye for now.